हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। जय श्री प्रभुपाद की जय। ओके सो फ्रॉम श्री ब्रह्म संहिता देन टेक्स्ट 49 देन दिस वर्स इज ऑन लॉर्ड ब्रह्मा। आई वर्शिप द सुप्रीम लॉर्ड गोविंदा Who becomes Brahma, the creator of the universe, by bestowing his powers to that jiva. Just as the sun displays a small portion of its powers of heat and light in all the sun stones, Suryakanta, which represent it. Brahma's position is shown to be different from any of the personalities mentioned so far, because he is a jiva. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur adds, in those kalpas when no eligible jiva is available, after the Brahma of the previous kalpa is liberated, Krishna, by the process of allotment of his own potency, creates the Brahma who has the nature of the avatar, descendant of the divinity in the active mundane principle, Rajoguna. By principle, Brahma is superior to ordinary jivas, but is not directly divinity. The fundamental significance of the above is that the aggregate of 50 attributes belonging to the jiva are present in a fuller measure in Brahma, who possesses, in a lesser degree, 5 more attributes which are not found in jivas. But in Shambhu, both the 50 attributes of jivas, as also the 5 additional attributes found in Brahma, are present in even greater measure than in Brahma. Footnote 25. Krishna's 5 transcendental qualities, which are particularly manifest in Brahma and Lord Shiva, are, this is beyond the 50. In other words, the 50 of the jivas, all of the jivas have those, and they may have a little bit more or less depending on their position. But whatever it is, Brahma will and Shiva will have more potency of those 50. Then beyond the 50, then they'll have another 5. Which then Brahma will have, you know, in a small degree. It means, in other words, he has a lot more of the 50 qualities that the jivas had than other general jivas. But of those 5 qualities beyond, then he'll have a little. He'll be the lowest of those who have those. Shiva will have more of that, and Narayan will have the most of that, right? So that they are changeless. 2, all cognizant. 3, ever fresh. 4, Satchitananda, possessing an eternal blissful body, and 5, possessing all mystic perfections. The qualities held by Narayan and up are, 1, he has inconceivable potency, 2, uncountable universes generate from his body, 3, he is the original source of all incarnations, 4, he is the giver of salvation to the enemies who he kills, and 5, he is the attractor of liberated souls. That's from Nectar Devotion, chapter 21. Right, and so then beyond that, so then Narayan then has those, it means all those, the 50 qualities of the jiva, the extra 5 that Brahma and Shiva have in full, and then these 5 qualities in full, right? And then Krishna then has beyond those 4 qualities, right? You know, his wonderful pastimes, his wonderful, always associating with devotees, his wonderful beauty, and he plays on the flute, right? So they're just showing, you know, being explained here that Brahma is in a special position because he's empowered by Krishna. And so he has these 5 extra qualities. And, you know, he can do the duties that he does to maintain the universe and everything, right? Because he manages the universe. Like the day-to-day management, that is Indra's doing. But still, the authority behind that is Brahma, and Brahma is creating all the different planetary systems and everything that Indra is managing, right? Okay, so is that, oh, okay, so that's all there is. So, any questions on Brahma? Yes, no. No, okay.
Maharaj, one question I have. Why even though we have the Brahma like the main acharya in the Sampradaya, it's very often that somebody is even worshipping Lord Brahma. Why he is in such position?
To be worshipped or he's not worshipped.
He's not worshipped even in our Sampradaya, you know.
That's because of, I think it was, I can't remember who it was, but there's some history where there's some curse where he won't be worshipped. So it's very rare like that. I think in, I've seen in Bangkok, there is a deity of Brahma at one of the crossroads. So it's not even an inside temple. It's an outside, you know, kind of like corner, you know, where two big streets meet, and he's there, and people go there and they offer incense and offer prayers and like that. So you see the corners, but it's just people who are going by and all that. Then they stop there, or they, you know, come there on purpose, offer, but it'll just be local people. But otherwise, in general, there's some curse. I don't know the, I forget the history of it, that he's cursed that no one will worship him. So that's then why it's like that. You know, but even the head of Sampradaya, you don't hear so much about specifically. There's temples of Narad Muni or of the four Kumaras. Lakshmi there is, but that's because they're specifically interested in Dhana Lakshmi, right? So that's an expansion of Mahalakshmi, that she takes care of that. This Dhana Lakshmi, she takes care of all the, you know, material wealth that people have. So she's, you don't generally, that whenever you see pictures of her, she's not with Vishnu, right? So she's just on her own there. There might be the elephants in the background, you know, and there's gold coins and, you know, all kinds of nice auspiciousness and money and everything like that. So that's the form that they worship. So technically, that form is an expansion of Lakshmi, and then she's generally in the position of the of the wife of Indra, like that. And so, yeah, so it's there, but always then you know, Divya Saraswati, Divya Lakshmi, and that, then they're always going to be with Lord Narayana. They're not going to be, you know, outside of that. Is
I
that?
was thinking exactly in the connection with our Sampradaya, because we have, for example, the some main acharyas in the altar. Then it's something bad to, I don't know, have also the Brahma like the main
No, it's
acharya.
not bad. It's just that according to Pancharatra, then you're worshiping your guru and four gurus before, right? Because otherwise, then, you know, how many gurus are you going to worship, right? Because it's like in our line, you know, now we would be at, I think it's, can't remember, we're above 30, you know, and then I think in the, I was talking to one person, I think, who is Kumara Sampradaya. There's like 50, you know, acharyas between the four Kumaras and today. And, you know, so different lines will have different things. So the Pancharatrik rule is you have your guru, then you have the Param Guru, the Parapara Guru, Parameshti Guru, and Mahaguru, or Mahaguru, then Parameshti. Like that. So that's there. But now, because we see Srila Prabhupada as the founder acharya, then the tendency would be to keep Srila Prabhupada and then the four gurus before, like we have now, up to Bhaktivinoda Thakura. And then you keep the picture of your guru. So you don't have to actually worry about who's between your guru and Srila Prabhupada. Just like, let's say, with the, you know, in the present day scene with the Shris, then they're worshiping their guru and Ramanujacharya. But they're not necessarily worshiping everybody in between. Like that, you know. As it is, then it becomes difficult. You know, how many prayers are devotees offering when they offer obeisances? You know, because otherwise, then, you know, it starts getting very big. So if they're comfortable with that, then that's nice. But for many, then, you know, it may not work out so nice. But yeah, because he's head of the Sampradaya means he begins, but still the one who holds the whole Sampradaya together, that you appreciate and understand the teachings, at least in the Kali Yuga, that's the founder Acharya. So Rupa Goswami is giving in Nectar Devotion about the, earlier in the 64 items of devotional service. So the first 10, I think, establish, what you should do and everything. The next 10 are things to avoid. Then there's the 44 of the main items. So in about 10, I think it's the fourth or fifth. Then it's you approach the previous acharyas through your acharya, right? So in this case, that universal aspect, that will be the founder acharya, right? That's how you understand. And you understand, so everybody is understood and seen through the founder acharya, right? And so it's not because he's a pure devotee or he's a nitya siddha or that, because all the acharyas are like that. But it's that they're all coming at different times to give something into the Sampradaya. And then the founder acharya pulls all that together and gives it to us in a way that can be appreciated. So Prabhupada says his books will be, the standard for 10,000 years, means everything will always be judged by how he explains it. So even understanding what Narottam Das Thakur is saying in his songs, or Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, or Krishnadas Kaviraj, or Rupa Goswami, like that, it will be understood through how the founder acharya is showing how you would approach it. So that's very important. So the founder acharya is something beyond who starts an institution. He's the one that pulls together. And so with him, then it's not a problem to start an institution, because now you have all the teachings all brought together. And then having an institution will go nicely, because otherwise, if you start up these institutions before that, sometimes they don't always work out, right? Like that. Or there might be, some infighting like that. But whatever, even if they do, like you see Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he started an institution. Now that was supposed to continue on, and then Srila Prabhupada would come within that, and would have been one of the prominent personalities within that, but still he'd be the founder acharya. But it's not that, but things didn't work out because they didn't understand what he was saying. Like Srila Prabhupada's pointing out, when he explains how the GBC works and how all those things, then we understand. But at the time, they didn't understand at all. So they didn't think it was an important aspect. They didn't understand that. No, that's how you hold together the preaching mission, is through that whole concept of GBC and things like that. They were taking it, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was the initiating guru and the acharya. So we just need more initiating gurus and acharyas, and then we can follow them. He was one guy, we have one guy, and, Hari Bol. And then from the effect of that, now there's however many there are of them. And each one functions separate. They don't interact. It means, they make some formal interactions and all that, but as far as dynamic preaching, there's no interaction, So therefore, they didn't understand. But with founder acharya, then it's made very clear. Then it can be followed. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. Anything else, or no? Okay. Okay, so then text 50. Oh, really? Oh, wow. So this is going fairly quickly. 50. Oh, somehow or another, I always thought those were earlier, but they're just at the end. Oh, okay. So this one's on Ganesh, right? Because remember, we were going through all the different prominent personalities and the Panchopasana and everything. So you see how they all connect, like you said here, is that Krishna has expanded as Brahma through his potencies, right? So he's empowering a jiva to do the work of secondary creation in the universe, right? So he can't do it on his own. It's by Krishna giving him that potency. And then he'll have that till the end of his lifetime, and then he loses that. And then, you know, he's liberated, and then the next manifestation of the universes, then there'll be a new Brahma, right? Ganesh. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, whose lotus feet, Ganesh, fixes firmly upon the two bulges on his forehead when offering obeisances, in order to gain his powers to destroy all the obstacles in the three worlds. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains. The power of destroying all obstacles to mundane prosperity has been delegated to Ganesh, who is the object of worship to those who are eligible to worship him. He has obtained a rank among the five gods as Brahma, possessing the mundane quality. The self-same Ganesh is a god in possession of delegated power by infusion of the divine power. All his glory rests entirely on the grace of Govinda, Brahma Samhita 550. So Ganesh has that power to remove obstacles, you know, and that. So that power is coming from Krishna. And it said he's holding the lotus feet of the Lord on his forehead, right? Because the elephant, at least the North Indian elephant, they have these two bumps on their head, kind of see these round, they're kind of round like this. South Indian elephants are just smooth, but the North has these more bumps like this. So these two tumulas sort of holds the lotus feet of the Lord on his head. And in that way, then he gets the power to be able to remove obstacles. So he says for those who are eligible to worship. So for the devotees, then the worshiping of the guru, then that is going to be taking that position and removing all obstacles and all that. But for the those who are working within the Vedic system, the Karmakandas and all that, then they'll worship Ganesh because, you know, that way then they're getting the blessings of the Lord to remove, but indirectly through Ganesh, and that they don't understand it's coming from the Lord. But for the devotees, they understand that Ganesh is getting his potency from the Lord, and then by worshiping Guru, then that blessings is automatically there. There's not a need to separately endeavor. Yeah. Further, Jiva Goswami adds, all people first praise Ganesh in order to remove all obstacles. Thus, people may think that they must first praise Ganesh. This verse explains his actual position. This point is made even stronger by the words of Kapila given below. For if Shiva, Ganesh's father, takes the foot water of Vishnu on his head, then Ganesh's position will be even less. Right? It means Ganesh, his father, is Shiva. Shiva's taking the water that's washed Krishna's feet on his head. So he's more powerful than Ganesh. So then even more we can see is that if Shiva, because we're starting back and then coming down in power like that. You know, you had you know, Krishna, and then you had his expansions and Garbhadakshay, Kiradakshay, then we had Shiva, then we had Brahma, you know, Durga was there. You know, so now is here. Yes, please.
Maharaj, if this like explanation given by the chair that it's instead the Lord should be worshipped, like why is still this worship Ganesh mentioned in the nectar of devotion that one should worship Ganesh before? I think it's in the chapter where it's avoiding offenses and it's like why
but
is
he
it
said for who's qualified? So how do you worship mm-hmm. Ganesh? Right, we worship by worshiping the Guru, right? Okay. And understanding it's by Guru and Krishna's grace, then all obstacles are removed because he's representing that potency of the Lord to remove those obstacles. So how do we access that mercy of the Lord? It's through the Parampara. Mm-hmm. right? For others, then they have their Kula Guru and everything like that. They're connected to the Veda. And then they worship Ganesh because that's their connection to that as feature of the Lord. But as Jiva Goswami is pointing out, but actually the that potency is coming from Krishna. So you don't need to worship Ganesh. You need to worship Krishna. But how do we worship Krishna? Do we just directly worship Krishna? No. We have to approach by worshiping Guru. So by us worshiping Guru, then automatically that removal of all obstacles that we would get from that aspect of Ganesh comes by worshiping Guru, worshiping Krishna, because the obstacles are removed by Krishna, right? Ganesh is just the officer that, you know, everybody deals with.
Yes, yes.
Is that okay?
Yes, Maharaj, yes. It's just okay. When sometimes there's some devotee who are very, like, attached to this concept to Ganesh, they're asking why Ganesh, and one time I told them that mantras which mentioned like Sarva Vigna Vinashana, like this, it has, and I told it is like I sense for Guru, but I told them that this is for Ganesh, and then they stopped their argument, and I told them that this mantra is for Guru, for Ganesh.
Yeah, but it's just that potency is our access to that lineage is through our Guru.
Yes.
Right there. You know, that's the point. You know, so he's respected, but yeah.
Yes, much. Thank you much. Thank you very much.
Okay. So then here he's quoting from Bhagavatam. The blessed Lord Shiva becomes all the more blessed by bearing on his head the holy waters of the Ganges, which has its source in the water that washed the Lord's lotus feet. The Lord's feet act like thunderbolts, hurled to shatter the mountain of sin stored in the mind of the meditating devotee. One should therefore meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord for a long time. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:28-22. Right, so by meditating the Lord's lotus feet, then, you know, as you said, it acts as the thunderbolts hurled to shatter the mountain of sin, you know, that's there, stored in the mind of the meditating devotee. So that by meditating on the Lord, that's removed. So the point is you're supposed to, they're only going as far as Ganesh. They're not meditating on Krishna, right? So the point is by meditating on Krishna, that's how you're removing all these. They don't go as far as to remove Krishna, to meditate on Krishna. So they're willing to meditate or worship Ganesh, right? Because they're saying, I will remove my material, you know, obstacles. But Ganesh, it's by the touch of the lotus feet of the Lord on his head that the power is then invested in him to remove the obstacles. But the power actually comes from the Lord's lotus feet. So the devotee meditates on the Lord's lotus feet. So then how do we approach the Lord's lotus feet? That's through Guru and the Parampara. Does that make sense? Yeah. So we have to remember, it's just who's done. It'd be just like, you have it's just like, let's say you have the main person, you know, like say some officer, and you need to get something done with the officer, and you go and see the secretary, and the secretary gets the work done, you know, gets your paper stamped or whatever it is. But where did that power come from? Did it come from that person, or does it come from the actual government secretary? It doesn't come from his secretary. Right, comes from whoever the government officer is, right? So the point is we don't need to go through that because we have a connection directly with the secretary through Guru. I mean, to the officer through Guru. You understand the principle is the same. So Rupa Goswami is saying you have to approach Ganesh, means you have to approach the Lord through his authorized agent. Who's the authorized agent? So it's going to be Guru. You know, so then you have to understand what's connecting here and all this. So it's not just the Kula Guru or this or that, but we're talking about the Pancharatrik Guru. If you're working on the Vedic platform, then you know, then you're going to be worshiping Ganesh, right? But on the, if you're working on the Pancharatra, the Bhagavat, then you're worshiping the guru in the parampara. That makes sense.
Maharaj, but do any other Vaishnava Sampradaya, they have some other ritual for worshipping Ganesh or not? Do they have? Or
I have no idea, but does it really matter?
No, just...
You know what I'm saying? That's the thing. Is I don't know, but it can't be that, oh, we should see what they do first. No, we have what we do. And that's good enough for us. Mm-hmm. This is what our acharyas have given us. Because it said here... For those who are eligible to worship him. So are you eligible? You know, how have you become eligible? How have you qualified yourself to worship Ganesh? No, but I want to become qualified. But why? You already have a qualification through your guru in the parampara directly to Krishna, who is by meditating on his lotus feet. Those are the thunderbolts by which, you know, the mountain of sin stored in the mind of the meditating devotee is destroyed. So why would you already have, why would you want to go this other thing?
No, this was asked by someone from Mumbai who were before involved in some, going to some Ganesh temples and things like that.
It means if they go by a Ganesh temple and they offer respects, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is you don't need to separately worship the demigods, because we're already, means the guru already embodies all the 33 million demigods, because all, what's the importance of the demigods? They carry a particular potency of the Lord. So they represent a certain aspect. But the guru represents all those aspects because he represents Krishna. So Krishna has all those aspects. So if you're directly approaching Krishna through the parampara, why do you need the demigods? Well, this one does this, that one does that, that one does that. There's 33 million.
Yes.
You know, so who's going to worship 33 million demigods? Right? Nobody. So therefore, you just worship Krishna. How do you worship Krishna? Through guru. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
So just, thank
you very much.
Yeah. So people get used to their, oh, but we worship the demigods, and if we don't, then something will happen. If you worship Krishna, that means if you're worried the demigod's going to give you trouble, the point is where does the demigod get his power? It gets it from Krishna. So if you're worshiping Krishna, why do you have to be worried about whatever small amount of power is in the demigod, right? Right? There's just a small fraction there just to do their job. But Krishna is the source of all that unlimitedly. So if you're worshiping Krishna, what will you lose by worshiping him and not worshiping the demigod? Right? And even Indra tries to make trouble because they're not worshiping him. How did that work out for Indra? Right? So that's the whole point. Is that, no, it's not. One doesn't have to worry. One already has a direct connection. Right? So they say, oh, but how to become qualified? We're qualified by worshiping the guru and then the parampara to Krishna. So we don't need to worship in that way. You know, as you ever see, like, you come into, what do you call it? You're coming into, let's say, the immigration, right? And then if you have a passport from that country or something, you go to one line and you could just walk through, you know, and then you see the other lines for all other passports. Right? You're standing in line like this and going back and forth. And all those from the local country just walk right up and through. I've even seen places, they just hold up the picture and just walk through. You know, they don't even have to stop and be stamped, nothing. You just go through like that. But these are, so if you can walk straight through, why do you want to go through that line? But that's the thing. Oh, no, but if we don't go through the line, we might not get the same effect on getting over the border. No, it's just you go to all that trouble and then you get over. This one, you just straight go through. So they want, they can do. But the point is then go stand in the line. It's not that you're going to get anything more. It's not you're getting something special or unique. No, because what is Ganesh offering? Removal of from mundane object, power to destroy all objects to mundane prosperity. Right? The guru can remove those things that the obstacles to spiritual advancement. You know? And if Krishna wants to remove the mundane obstacles, then he can do that. He's the one, Ganesh, that does it anyway. It's not that Ganesh himself does it. It's Krishna's potency in Ganesh that does. Does that make sense? It's just we get attached to this idea of, no, the demigod. No, if we don't do something, it'll go wrong. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Text 51, the nine material principles. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, from whom the three worlds composed of earth, water, fire, air, ether, space, time, mind, and atmas appear, by whom they continue their existence, and within whom they enter at the time of universal destruction. Within the Vedic pantheon are millions of demigods, each controlling a different aspect of the material phenomena. According to this verse, Govinda is the lord of them all, being the ultimate cause of their appearance, subsistence, and destruction. Then from the Vikdarshini Tika, therefore it is also correct that all the elements and their deities are ultimately under the control of Govinda. Right, so the demigods, like we saw, Durga, then she's dealing with all these external elements like that. And that, and then you have the mind, the atmas, those are, you know, not under, that means they may control the modes of controlling, but the atmas aren't there. So here you have earth, water, fire, air, ether, right? Then you have the mind, right, which controls all those things connect, because the earth, water, fire, air, ether, then from them you get the five, senses, and from them you get the five sense, the objects, you know, sound, taste, touch, smell, and what did we miss? That's smell, that's form. Yeah, that's seeing. Yeah, the seeing one.
Oh, sorry.
The see, we forgot. Okay. So the mind will control all that, you know, so the 16. And also then when you say the mind, it can also include, you know, the subtle body, meaning how the intelligence and false ego are all combined there, and the polluted consciousness, right? But not necessarily the polluted consciousness and that. But now it's time and space. You need those for space that accommodates everything, and time is how you move through it. And then you have the jivas. The atmas, right? So then they're polluted consciousness, then they move through in the mundane way, and if they're in the spiritual consciousness, they move through in a spiritual way. So that way you can say the nine material principles just down to there, you know. So however you want to put them together, you can put them together in that kind of way, right? Like we generally expand it out to get a more clear understanding by 24 elements. Right? So then you're getting the five gross elements, right? Then, what is it? Then the tanmatras, you know, the sense objects, then the senses themselves. Then you're going to get, what do you call it? That's 15, the mind 16. Then you're going to have the intelligence, the false ego, 17, 18. Then what are they doing? They do polluted consciousness, That's 19. Then the other, there's another set of five that I miss. Oh, the working senses. So you have the knowledge acquiring senses, right? Five. Then you have the second five, the working senses. That's 10. Then you have the tanmatras, right? And then you have the senses themselves. So that's 20. Then mind, intelligence, false ego. That's 23. And the polluted consciousness, so the consciousness of the jiva, that's 24. Right? So then in here, is you if you by tanking those earth, water, fire, air, ether, that's how everything of those 20 are expanding, is from those. So by mentioning these five here, you include the 20. Right? And then by the mind, then you're including mind, intelligence, false ego. Right? Atmas, you're going to be in the polluted consciousness, right? And then space is going to be what's going to accommodate all that. Because otherwise it has to have some place. Does that make sense? So that's why sometimes you see in different places in the scriptures, they're giving different number of elements. Like here it's giving 9. Some places I think it gives, sometimes it'll just say 16. Because it doesn't count the working senses or other things, because the mind includes the subtle, and the working senses means your application of it. So you just have the five elements, the sense objects, and the senses themselves. So that 15 plus the mind, you can say that's material existence. So you can say 16 elements. That makes sense. So Lord Chaitanya then presented it as 24. And so that's the one we use. It makes it very easy because then you can delineate all of them very nicely. Yes? No? Any questions? No? Okay. 52, Surya Deva. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, by whose command the sun, the king of all planets, moves in the sky, determining the cycles of time. The sun, endowed with profuse heat and light, reveals the world through his light, gives sight to the eye, and is the personification of all the devatas. Suryadeva is one of the functional deities within the scheme of Panchopasana. Therefore, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes, quote, certain professors of the Vedic religion worship the sun as Brahman. The sun is one of the hierarchy of the five gods. Some people target in heat the source of this world and therefore designate the sun, the only location of heat, as the root cause of this world. Notwithstanding all that may be said to the contrary, the sun is after all only the presiding deity of a sphere of the sum total of all mundane heat, and is hence a god exercising delegated authority, right? Means he's only dealing with mundane heat. He doesn't deal outside of that. And he's only dealing with the heat in this universe, not that this sun's heating the next universe. The sun performs his specific function of service certainly by the command of Govinda. Brahmasamhita 552 purport. Right, so some will say, oh, without the sun, then, you know, you won't have life. So therefore, all life comes from the sun. So therefore, the sun is the supreme, like that. So they're just to, you know, but generally in that, this they'll worship, at least in the Vedic, they'll worship up to there. But they're also then taking it to go beyond that, to the feature of Brahman is beyond. So it's representing Brahman. So they don't know. Because the point is, if you understand the personal, it's from the person comes the powers. And, you know, in other words, the powers are non-different from the person. And so, therefore, then all powers that we see, potencies that we see, that's all coming from the person. But when they don't know the person, then they only know that there is the potencies. I mean, the potencies are there, and they're being manifest, but that source of that potency is the main, but it's impersonal. Just as the potencies are impersonal, they take it that the source is impersonal. But now if the impersonal can be seen as personal here temporarily, why wouldn't the source be personal also? How do you get something? You can't create something from an item that the quality that the item doesn't have. Just like clay, it whatever you make with clay, it has the qualities of clay. It may be impersonal, it's just a blob and you turn it into something, but it still has the qualities of what it's from. So that it can be formed, that is a quality of the clay. So that there is form here, that means because there has to be form in the absolute. Does that make sense? So it's just they only go up to that much, and that's all the far they can see, because that's all the far they can see from the mundane platform. Right? The mundane platform only allows them to understand there is something beyond that's absolute and all-knowing, you know, eternal, all that they can understand that. But that's all the farther they can go. So only if they come in contact with the Parampara, the Vaishnava Parampara, then they can understand about the form of the Lord, and the form of the Lord is eternal. Then they can start to see that it actually works the other way. It's not about going from us up, it's from the Lord coming down. Yes? Jiva Goswami quotes a verse from Shruti as evidence. Bishasmad vatav pavate bishodeti suryaha. The wind blows out of fear of the Lord. The sun rises out of fear of the Lord. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.8. So, Sri Jiva also adds, as the sun is the eye of the universal form, as the deity of the eye, it empowers the eyes of the individuals of the universe with sight. Quote, the sun is also called Chakshus, eye, because it is the eye of the universal form, end quote. Tigdarshani Tika 5.52. With this verse, Brahma concludes the section describing the subordinate positions of the demigods. Right now, remember here is Brahma himself is saying this. So even when he's talking about himself, you know, he's meaning, you know, everybody's subservient to Govinda. So it's not that, okay, you guys are saying this. No, Brahma is saying this. And you're not going to get a bigger authority than Brahma in the universe. Right? So then, yeah, not a problem. So also pointing out the sun is the eye of the universal form, because the universal form sees, therefore we see. Right? So his power of sight is in the sun, is imbued in the sun. Therefore we can see. Right? So when the universal form desires to see, then he creates the sun, he creates form, he creates the sense of the eye, you know, that then you can work with. And, you know, yeah. Yeah, any questions on this one? No? No? Okay. Text 53, the source of all power. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, by whom all acts of piety and sin, knowledge of liberation, all practices to attain liberation, as well as all living entities, including Brahma, insects, and birds, are endowed with particular potencies to produce particular effects. We have learned up until now that Govinda is the master of the demigods. Is there anything outside of his control? Quote, what then can be said? What then can be said of the powers existing in all other things? Their powers must all arise from Govinda. Gita says, Aham sarvasya prabhavo, mata sarvam pravartate. I am the source of everything. Due to me, everything operates. Bhagavad Gita 10.8. From Brahma to the glowworm and all 84 lakh species in between, any display of power is simply a glimmer of the Lord's energy. Quote, every one of them is endowed with the distinctive powers as individuals and is powerful in a particular sphere. but these powers are by their nature not fully developed in them. The degree of power and nature of property vary according to the measure of manifestation of the possessions of the individual conferred upon him by Sri Govinda. Brahmasamhita 5.53 purport. So every living entity has some particular power to do something, right? And but that power is given by Krishna. So in the beginning, in the creation, then Krishna has established what everything is, right? What all the elements are, what all the species of life, all the 14 planetary systems, whatever there is, whatever actually, the Brahmas, the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, all these different things, whatever are the potencies, the duties, the abilities, and all that, that's all established by Krishna. And so the ideas that we're independent, no, he establishes it. That's why thinking, oh no, you know, we don't have to follow all these old religious things and all that, that potency comes from Krishna. Where else does it come from? Right? Does that make sense? It's just like, let's say you're driving down the street. Then where did the street come from? Did you put it there? Did your neighbor put it there? Did the birds, the bees put it there? Did the wind, did the sun, the sky, the local government put it there? Right? What about the lines on there? Local government. Why is there you drive on this side of the road or that side of the road? And why different speeds and where you have to stop and everything? Local government. So if I see the road and say, no, the road is here, there, where is this government? I don't see the government, I just see the road. The road is the source of everything and all that. You have to think there's something wrong with this person. So the point is no, I can do whatever I like. I don't have to follow these rules and all that. But the potency of the government is there, and you don't follow, then this car will drive up and have some flashing lights on the top, and they'll pull you over and have a few questions to ask about your, particular erratic, driving patterns. So this idea that all this is going on just on its own, we'll think, oh no, everything goes exact. It's just like, let's say, so, oh, we're devotees. We don't have to follow the rules. Do they stop at the crosswalk? Do they push the little button? Do they wait for the light to change? And then they walk? Which way do they look? I'm sitting on this side of the road and I went across the street. Which way do I have to look? I have to look right. Right? Because that's the way the car comes from. When I go to the other side, then I have to look left. Right? That is it that, oh, we're devotees. We don't have to follow these rules. I can look wherever I want or not look. I'll just skip across at any time I like. No. But then we're going to say that this whole universe isn't functioning. Oh, I don't have to follow these rules. How long ago was that done? This is, 100-year-old rules. Why do I have to follow those? I'm a devotee. This is 2025. They're willing to follow, rules on roads that go back 100 years, but not what Prabhupada says 50 years ago. So are we dealing with intelligence here? No. We're just dealing with a lack of understanding. That's all. Because the living entity wants to be independent so it can control and enjoy. That's the basis. And so then we have, but here it's being pointed out, Brahma's pointing out step by step that whatever you look at in the creation, from the smallest to the biggest, it's all Govinda. It's all being his potency, his rules, his laws, his effectiveness in applying it. All that, that's the way it is. Right? Okay. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that even the process of elevation for the living entities, Varna Dharma, Ashram Dharma, Tapasya, study of the Shruti, etc., bear fruit only by the Lord's mercy, right? So you have all the different religious processes that are given, but they only give their fruit because of Krishna. So if you're worshiping Krishna, then those recommended religious activities that you're doing to please Krishna, then that's the potency is coming from Krishna. You don't have to do all the other technical rules that maybe others have followed. That's why it says, what's your qualification? Right? Adhikar. Adhikar is a thing. You have the Adhikar for following this Vedic thing like that. You have the Adhikar for following the Pancharatrik. You have the Adhikar for following the Bhagavat. Right? You don't have the Adhikar for following any of them, right? The local dog, he just does dog stuff. Right? He just follows the modes of nature. So these processes are there to help elevate. But we see is that there's unlimited rules and regulations that are given by the Vedas. So you follow the one you're qualified for. So if you're qualified for following the Bhagavad is the basis, and then the Pancharatrik is the form, and then some subsidiary ones from the Vedic that, you know, the Acharyas have given us, that's what we follow. We don't have to follow beyond that. We will get the full benefits. Right? While others, they may follow more technical this and that, but what are they getting? How far will it take it? It's mundane. It's temporary. Well, what we're doing is eternal. So whatever they give us, that's what we follow. That's Daivavarnashram. That's connecting religion to Krishna. That's what Daivavarnashram means, Sanatana Dharma, right? Sanatana means eternal. Here's not eternal, right? Krishna's eternal. So connecting to him, that's Sanatana Dharma. Yes, any questions? No?
Thank you. Maharaj, so if he says here that so that even all the process will bear fruit only by the Lord's mercy, but so in case of non-devotees, then how does that work? How is that when non-devotees bestowed mercy that they get success in this and somebody is not given mercy that they don't get success in this?
Through the demigods, through the laws, through the modes of nature. So in other words, they have to work with all these features of the Lord. He manages the universe through all of them. And they have to then, by their adhikar, by their qualification, then qualify to get that mercy by, you know, did they follow the ritual? Did they do everything? Did they have the right intent? Did they have the right attitude? All these different things they have to see is, yes, you know, we did all that, and then, okay, they checked all the boxes, so then they get the mercy to that degree in this area. That's why the demigods and all that, they're managing all that for the mundaners. But for the devotees, that's why it's called the quick path. It's like someone else is taking the stairs, and we take the elevator. Who's going to get, you know, right? How many stairs can you go up? How far away is Goloka? So you know, we take the elevator to Goloka. They take the stairs to however far they get in the material world and stop. Right? So that's what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was meaning about adhikar, about qualification, is that they're only qualified for the Vedic, so they have to worship Ganesh. That's the only way they're approaching the Lord, because they don't know the Lord. They only know there's rituals in this and that there's some power behind. And so you approach this one and then you get the work done. You know, just like, you know, there's a government. You may never even see the leaders of the government. But you know, if you do these different things, you get things done. You know, you stay out of trouble. You know, life goes on. Hari Bol. Right? Isn't it? But now there's people who personally know the government people and they get things done, you know, in their way.
Yes.
Right? You know, let's say the prime minister's son, you know, he wants, you know, pizza for on dinner for Friday. Now, does he have to go fill out a form, go down to the office, get it stamped, put it in, have it, you know, approved, then give it back, then bring it, and then give it to his... No. Right? No. So that's the whole thing. It works differently because of the personal, and you're connected to the personal through the parampara, then it works very nicely. Okay?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Anything else? No? Okay. Yeah. So that's what we always have to remember, is that all the dharmas, you know, varnashram, as you mentioned, tapasya, study of the Vedas, you know, austerity, charity, all these different things, they give their benefit because Krishna empowers them to have that benefit. But the point is humans are supposed to use these for elevating their consciousness. And how do you do that? By using that in connection with the Lord. So if you're doing those things connected to the Lord, you don't have to be involved in those things outside of its direct connection with the Lord. Right? Therefore, what the acharyas give us to follow in these different religious processes, that's what we do. We don't have to do more than that. There might be more other things that other people do. We don't need to do them. Right? Yeah?
Yes, thank you, Maharaj. Yes, thank you.
Okay, text 54. Govinda favors his devotees. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, who bestows to the red beetle and to Indra their experience of happiness and distress as an appropriate response to their actions, and who completely destroys the karmic results for those who practice bhakti. The previous acharyas alluded to the great variety of living entities struggling in material existence. Are they all doomed to suffer? Quote, the Supreme Lord should be regarded like the rain, which spreads showers everywhere. Thus the Lord is unprejudiced in dispensing appropriate karma to the jivas. But at the same time, Govinda favors his devotees. That is explained in this verse. Quote, I am equal to all living entities. I do not hate anyone, nor do I favor anyone. But those who worship me with devotion are in me, and I am in them. Bhagavad Gita 9:29. Quote, but I carry the burden of supply and maintenance of those who desire constant association with me, and who, thinking only of me, worship only me. Bhagavad Gita 9:22. God impartially induces the fallen souls to act in the way that is consequent on their deeds of their previous births, and to enjoy the fruition of their labors. But out of his great mercy to his devotees, he purges out by the fire of ordeal the root of all karma, namely nescience and evil desires. Karma, though without beginning, is still perishable. Karma of those who work with the hope of enjoying the fruits of their labors become everlasting and endless, and is never destroyed. The function of sannyas is also sort of a karma befitting an ashrama, and is not pleasant to Krishna when it aims at liberation. For example, desire for emancipation. They also receive fruition of the karma, and even if it be disinterested, the karma ends in atma mamata, self-pleasure. But those who are pure devotees always serve Krishna by gratifying his senses, forsaking all attempts of karma and jnana, and being free from all desires save that of serving Krishna. Krishna has fully destroyed the karma, its desires, and nescience of those devotees. It is a great wonder that Krishna, being impartial, is fully partial to his devotees. End quote. Brahma Samhita 5:54. So the point is he says, I'm equal. I do not hate anyone, nor do I favor anyone. But according to your action, you get the results of your action. So if you're dealing with the mundane, then the modes of nature through his potencies is everything we've described before, you know, what Shiva's doing, Brahma's doing, Ganesha's doing, everybody's doing. They have the potencies, then you're working under all that. But if you approach him in devotion, and that, and you're surrendered to him, you as a person, to him as a person, then he takes care of everything that's theirs, because you've approached him, he's reciprocating. Right? So in this way, you could say he's favoring the devotees, but at the same time, you could say, why the devotees? Why not everyone else? Why don't the others take up devotion? If it's so quick and easy, why not? Why don't they take up devotion? They did, he would reciprocate. You know, you do your good karma, he gives you good results. You do your bad karma, you get bad results. So you worship him in devotion, he reciprocates in that way. You know, if you're dealing in an inferior method and an inferior, you know, results, why are you complaining about someone using a superior method and getting superior results? Right? If I melt a piece of plastic and then pour it into a mold, I'm going to have a piece of plastic, right? When I open the mold. But if I melt gold and pour it in there, I'm going to have gold. So why should I complain? How come he's got gold and I've got plastic? Because you just picked up a piece of plastic and made it. It was easy, practical. Well, he did some extra work to get the gold. Right? So Krishna is the person. He reciprocates personally to those who deal with him as a person. And if you deal with him, you know, simply as the external energy, he responds in the form of how he's empowered the material energy to respond. Yes? No? Like that. So it's a great one that Krishna, being impartial, is fully partial to his devotees. That's the wonderfulness, is all these seeming contradictions are perfectly reconciled in the Lord. Right? It's not by our view, our how we think it should be. It's according to how Krishna says it is. You know, we'll say, no, it has to make sense to me. No, it doesn't. You know, it can make sense to you if you surrender to Krishna, but if you don't, then why do you demand that you're the center of the universe, right? Text 55. Devotees attain their sarup. Yam krodha kama sahaja pranayari bhiti vatsalya moha guru gaurava sevya bhavaihi sanchintya tasya sadrishim tanumapurete govindamari purusham tamahang bhajami. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, the meditators of whom, by meditating upon him under the sway of wrath, amorous passion, natural friendly love, fear, parental affection, delusion, reverence, and willing service, attain to bodily forms befitting the nature of their contemplation. According to Jiva Goswami, this verse is Lord Brahma's concluding exhortation to worship Krishna. Govinda gives results that others cannot give, even to his enemies. How much more he will give to his excellent devotees, having no material desires, whose desires are focused only on Govinda. Therefore, who else is worthy of worship? Only Govinda should be worshipped. Thus Brahma says, Govinda Mari Purusham Tamahang Vajami. With this, Brahma completes his praises with a last statement. Dikdarshini Tika 5:55. This verse is a description of the primary and secondary rasas experienced by devotees of the Lord. Sri Jiva says, these devotees attain bodies similar to the Lord's to the extent that the form and qualities are suitable for their particular mood. Right? In other words, they have a mood to worship the Lord. They get forms that perfectly suit that mood. Right? The following table shows the Acharya's word-for-word explanations of this verse. Right? So, krodha, rauda, rasa. Anger, one of the seven secondary rasas, footnote 26. These secondary emotions mentioned in this verse, fear, anger, delusion, support the primary rasas of affection and do not exist without the primary rasas. They appear only in devotees. The enemies of Krishna exhibit anger and fear of Krishna. But these are not accepted as true rasas by Srila Rupa Goswami, since they do not have a primary rasa with Krishna. Such fearful asuras like Shishupal, quote, suras like Shishupal, Kamsa, and pandits of the pantheistic school, end quote, attain only Sayuja Mukti. They are not awarded eternal forms like the devotees spoken of in this verse. The static love and anger caused by Krishna is exhibited by Lalita, Rohini, Yashoda, Nakula, and so on. Nectar Devotion, chapter 47. Right, so in other words, the devotees having all the variety of moods in these 12 rasas, you know, the five primary and seven secondary. So then the secondary are there to support the primary. So if you don't have a primary rasa with Krishna, then these other, even if you're directing the secondary at Krishna, it won't give you the proper position, right? You'll have to choose to take up a service. You take up a position of service towards Krishna. So the point is those who, so like in the, I think it's in the second, no, third verse in the first chapter of Bhagavatam, then there in the introduction, then it's talking about all the rasas. And Prabhupada in the purport mentions that in the material world, people are basically just dealing with the secondary rasas, right? Because the primary is not situated in Krishna, so it's ever adjusting. So they may always be angry, but it'd be angry at different people in different situations and different here and there. So it's they're just experiencing anger. It may be directed here or there or so many different things, but they don't have a rasa in which it's actually directed. Right. Does that make sense? So, kama, madhurya rasa, sahaja pranaya, natural affection, sakirasa, bhiti, bhayanaka rasa, fear, a secondary rasa, vatsalya, vatsalya rasa, moha, vyavichari bhava, operating only in conjunction with the principle stai bhavas. It is a state in which one forgets everything, caused when the Supreme Lord disappears from the vision of the devotee. Footnote 27. According to Srila Rupa Goswami, then, a blank or confused state of the mind, internal interaction, arising from joy, separation, fear, or lamentation, is called moha. In this state, there is falling on the ground, absence of sense perceptions, wandering about, and inactivity. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 2.4.92. Right, so then he's bringing up the primary rasas, the secondary rasas, the vyabhichari bhavas, right? Then Guru Gaurava, also known as Gaurav Priti. This is a type of dasya, in which one thinks of Krishna as one's superior or parent, or one identifies oneself as his son, such as his children in Dwarka. Right? Because you have, see, the parental ras means the parent to the child. But in the other way, child to parent, that's Gaurav Bhav. Because you don't have a parental rasa with your parent. You have that of servitorship, right? The parent is superior, right? And Savya, Dasya Ras, right? So he's shown that all the five main rasas are there. Then these other supporting elements, you know, of the secondary and of the avicharis, then it's all mentioned. Jiva Goswami continues. Should be understood that those persons who spontaneously attain concentration on the Lord with a favorable mood, as mentioned in this Bhagavatam verse, attain much more than that, more than what the demons attain. It should also be understood that those who constantly fix their minds on the Lord attain various forms accordingly to the intensity of their concentration. Dikdarshini Tika 555. Right, so we see that also here is that the demons may attain the Lord, but it's not going to be in the same form as those who are meditating in devotion, right? So Shishupal's angry at Krishna, Krishna kills him, he'll get liberated from the material existence. Now, in that state of liberated existence, now then, seeing that the mind, you know, thinks of different things, he will be thinking of the Lord. Now being liberated, he doesn't have that sense of anger towards the Lord that came from his mundane concept. So now he may appreciate the good qualities of the Lord, the wonderful qualities, and then being attracted to those wonderful qualities, then wanting to serve, then he goes to Vaikuntha. Right? Now, at the same time, his then mother Yashoda might be upset with Krishna for breaking the pot and behaving badly, so she feels it's her duty to chastise him, so she's chasing him around with a stick. Right? And so, therefore, then, you know, every year for 1 month, then we're offering lamps, you know, to Krishna, you know, and mother, in remembrance of this pastime with Krishna, the Damodar Leela, right? We're not, so that's something special. So that position then is that of the parent, you know, she's parent of Krishna. While the other is, then you'll attain to that, but as a servant in Vaikuntha. Because you didn't have any other specific concentration, right? The concentration is, one is you're seeing the Lord in the negative light, but once you get purified by liberation after he kills one, then one can then look at it from the point of you know, the special qualities that are there, and therefore then go to Vaikuntha. Yes? No? Very good. Yes? A verse from Vedanta Sutra is quoted to show the power of service to the Lord. Jagat Vyapara Varjam. Except for creating universes, the devotees attain all other powers. Vedanta Sutra 4.4.17. Yeah. So they attain all these wonderful qualities that match the Lord's, and they can interact in all these nice services. But in any case, anyone approaches the Lord in any way. That's why Narad Muni is saying in the Srimad Bhagavatam that even those who approach the Lord out of anger or envy or that, they still attain to the transcendental position. But the position they, and then he says, so let alone, how about those who approach the Lord in devotion? So then Jiva Goswami is pointing out that they'll all attain the Lord, but those who have meditated on the Lord favorably in devotion with a particular relationship in mind, they're going to attain even a greater position. So as we see, the Lord reciprocates with everyone. He's all auspicious, so everyone is benefited. But those who then approach him with, you know, with more kind of that wonder, you know, in a wonderful way, in a devotional way or a favorable way, then attain even more. Text 56. The Supreme Destination. Shriya Kanta Kanta Paramapurusha Kalpa Tadavo Turumabhumish Chintamani Ganamai Toyamamritam Kataganam Natyam Gamanamapi Vamsi Priyashaki Shiranandam Jyotif Paramapi Tadaswadhyamapicha. Sayatrakshirabdhi sravati surabhi pyaschas sumahan. Nimeshardhakyo va vrajati nahi trapi samayaha. Vajesweta dvipam tamahamiha golokamitiyam. Virantaste shanta kshiti viralachara katipaye. I worship that transcendental seat known as Sweta Dweep, whereas loving consorts, the Lakshmis and their unalloyed spiritual essence, practice the amorous service of the Supreme Lord Krishna as their only lover, where every tree is a transcendental purpose tree, where the soil is the purpose gem, all water is nectar, every word is a song, every gate is a dance, the flute is the favorite attendant, effulgence is full of transcendental bliss, and the supreme spiritual entities are all enjoyable and tasty, where numberless milk cows always emit transcendental oceans of milk, where there is eternal existence of transcendental time, who is ever present and without past or future, and hence is not subject to the quality of passing away even for the space of half a moment. That realm is known as Goloka only to a very few self-realized souls in this world. The previous verse indicated how those antagonistic to Krishna merge into the undifferentiated region of the Paravyoma, the impersonal Brahman. Where do their devotional counterparts go? This verse explains to Sweta Dweep. Sweta means pure and Dweepa means island. Just as Brahma's Govindam prayers begin with a portrayal of Krishna's planet, Chintamani Prakara Sadmashu, they end with a similar glorification. From Dik Darshini Tika. Quote, Brahma has praised the Lord with verses, showing how Govinda is most worthy of worship. Now in two verses, he praises the planet belonging to him. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur summarizes. The sum and substance of it is that all the variegatedness of this mundane world and much more variety over and above the mundane are to be found in Goloka. The variety in the transcendental world is more centralized, whereas in the mundane world it is not so, and hence productive of weal and woe. Right? It's centralized. It's around Krishna, and everybody is also centered around Krishna. It means Krishna is the center of their life also. So everything goes very well. But in the material world, it's not so centralized. So even though it's all about Krishna, we don't see it that way. So everybody functions in their own world. And therefore, there's so much woe because all these worlds bash into each other. Right? The centralized variety of Goloka is unalloyed and full of transcendental cognitive joy. The Vedas and sadhus practicing devotion revealed in the Vedas. By availing the support of their individual cognitive aptitude, actuated by devotion, they have a sight of divine realm, and by the power of the grace of Krishna, their tiny cognitive faculty attaining the quality of infinitude, they are enabled to be on the level and plane of enjoyments of Krishna. Yes, so the devotees there, because they're fully absorbed in Krishna, then even though their senses may be limited because they're only a portion of Krishna, but being in contact with Krishna, who is unlimited, therefore they're getting an unlimited benefit, right? They're functioning on that limit position with the Lord. Krishna's functioning on the eternal platform and the unlimited platform. Therefore, the devotees are also functioning in that same capacity. Right? It's just like whatever you do, your finger is going along with you. So if you're acting in that connected to Krishna, you're also taking part in that wonderful, unlimited position. That's from Brahma Samhita 556 report. What does a sight of this divine realm entail? Jiva Goswami explains the details. Shriya can only refer to the young women of Raja and not Lakshmi, since the gopis are well known in mantras and methods of meditation. Though these women are unlimited in number, Kantaha, there is only one male lover, Kantaha. By this superiority of Govinda over exalted Narayana and others, forms Parama Purusha is shown. Right? So he's of Purushas, he's the Parama Purusha. Next, the superiority of Govinda's abode over other abodes is shown. Right, so there's all these Lakshmis, and he's the lord of all these Lakshmis. So therefore, then he even shows that he's the supreme Purusha, even above Narayana. All the trees are celebrated as desire trees, Kalpa Tardavo Drumaha, because every single tree can bestow every possible desire. Right? So that means it's whatever you want. It's not that it's just, oh, you can get any fruit from the tree or any flower. You could get anything you wanted, you know, like that. But the point is because they only are interested in devotion to Krishna, only something useful to Krishna is wanted. Therefore, they just take some fruits and flowers. That's all. They don't take something else. The earth, Bhumihi, is similar to Chintamani Ganamayi. Of course, if the earth fulfills all desires, what can be said of things like the Kastuba jewel, as jewels of the essence of the earth? The water is tasty like nectar. What then can be said of the taste of real nectar available there? Right? So it's saying if the earth can give everything, what about like the Kasuba gem? So if water is tasty, then what about those things that are specially known to be tasty? Similarly, if the speaking is attractive like singing, how much more attractive will be the songs? And if the walking is graceful like dancing, how much more charming will be the dancing there? The flute is considered the dearest friend because its pervasive sound announces his condition of joy to all people. The luminaries like the sun and moon are made of knowledge and bliss. Chidanandam Jyotihi. Thus the light is called supreme, param, because the moon in Goloka is eternally a full moon. Api indicates that this light reveals everything, right? Because here he's been cursed that he goes through all these phases and loses his power, but he's saying in Goloka, he's always full. You know, it's always a full moon night, you know, so it's always wonderfulness. You know, but then the concept of being the phases, then that will be there. Because the residents of Goloka take part in the Boma Lila, and here the moon moves through those phases. Right? Does that make sense? So it's there, but you're in the present, it's full. So yes, it does move through these phases, but right now it's full. But it moves through the phases in the Boma Lila, and in the Goloka Lila, then it doesn't. Api indicates that this light reveals everything. All the pleasurable, ashvadyam, items are also full of knowledge. And bliss, since they are made of the chit shakti of the Lord. Oceans of milk flow from the cows because the cows are absorbed in hearing the sound of Govinda's flute. The inhabitants of Goloka do not know time at all because they are absorbed in Govinda. Samaya na vrajanti. Time does not proceed for even half a second, right? Because they're always absorbed in Krishna. Or the mean can be the faults of time do not exist there. Digdarshani Tika 5:56. So they're always absorbed in Krishna now, so they're always in the present. So there's not even half a second that it goes. And they're not thinking of the Lord. At the same time, it's then all the faults that time have, where it separates you from things and this and that, and then it doesn't have that fault there, because one's always absorbed in Krishna. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur intimates that this verse also hints at the appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There is a hidden meaning of the proposition, even the supreme that is also nevertheless the object of enjoyment. Paramapi tad asvadhyamapi cha. The word paramapi indicates that Sri Krishna is the only truth absolute in all the transcendental blissful principles. And tad asvadhyamapi means his object of enjoyment. The glory of Radha's love for Krishna, the tasty quality of rasa of Krishna that is realized in Radha, and the bliss of which Radha is conscious in the process of such realization. All these threefold bhavas, emotional entities, become available for enjoyment by Krishna when he attains his personality of Sri Gaurasundara. It is also this that constitutes the transcendental bliss of the delicious loving rasa service manifested by Sri Gaurasundara. This also eternally exists only in the self-same Svaita Dweep. Brahma Samhita 5:56 purport. So he's also there, Lord Chaitanya is eternally there in Svaita Dweep, you know, in Goloka, tasting in this way. And then by the mercy we see in Dvaitacharya, he calls him to come here to save all those living entities, you know, all these sorry souls that are here, that are distracted by the mundane. Here, okay. Okay, the glory of Radha's love for Krishna, the taste, equality, rasa of Krishna that is realized by Radha. Right? In other words, Radha's love for Krishna, then the taste, equality, of Krishna that is realized by Radha, and the bliss by which Radha is conscious of the process of such realization. Right, the glory of Radha's love, that's the sambandha aspect. Tasty quality of rasa, right, the qualities of things that is realized by Radha, that's the avideya. And the bliss which Radha is conscious of the process of sexualization, right, the part, what do you call it? Ayojana. These three features of Radha's love for Krishna is what Lord Chaitanya is then always tasting. Right, so in other words, the feature of Govinda, the feature of Gopinath, the feature of Madan Mohan, all these three features, then this is how Srimati Radharani is absorbed in Krishna, and Lord Chaitanya comes to taste those three. Right, by those, yeah, does that make sense? Right. Yeah, any questions on this?
Yes, Maharaj, I just thought that there was this word used that the spiritual world is fully centralized. And like I understand it's around Krishna, but then why is it, what would be the difference when, like, Srila Prabhupada didn't want ISKCON to be centralized? And that apparently because in every place there is their own circumstances, but it's still like it's, it should still be centralized around Krishna. So how are these different levels, two levels working of not being centralized and being centralized around Krishna at the same time?
No, it's always centralized around Krishna. That's the whole point. When you centralize it, then the point is that it all goes back to this particular central management that doesn't actually therefore deal with the personal individuality of the various managers that are there around or the people that they're working with. It's like if you have a centralized office, you have one way to fill out a form. And it doesn't matter where you are, what you want to get done. You have to do it exactly in that way. Mm-hmm. Have you ever noticed whenever you try to fill out a form, it doesn't quite exactly match the situation you're in?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And every person feels that. So the only person that thinks that this form is perfect is that person in the office, you know, of the centralized, you know, government authority that has written it.
Yeah.
He thinks it's perfect because it's his personality. Now, the whole rest of the world now has to adjust to his personality. Yeah. But he's not the center. Krishna's the center. Everybody can adjust to Krishna as the center. But how is everybody going to adjust to some random bureaucrat? Hence, then you don't centralize. The only thing that's centralized is it's all about Krishna, developing your love for Krishna, chanting Hare Krishna. These are the things. Prabhupada already gave those, so why do we have to add our own subjective concepts of reality to the actual reality, the transcendental reality that Prabhupada's already given? How will that actually benefit? The persons who come up with it will think it's fabulous, but no one else other than them will think it's fabulous.
Yes.
Is that okay?
Yes. Yes. No, so I was thinking that if, if devotees who are, the neophytes also cannot be really agree because they are not so centralized on Krishna, then if they lead the others, instead of more advanced devotees leading others, then it's not relatable to everybody else.
Yeah, no, that's there. Yeah. Yes, but at the same time, as if they're relating what they've heard from authority, then it always relates.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They don't know about chanting Hare Krishna, but they've learned from authority that chanting is the solution. So if you have a problem, you can chant. And that, I may not know how it works, but it does work. I've tried it. It's working for me. You can try it. It works for you. How exactly? You can ask that person. That's who I heard from.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Very good.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Okay. So we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi, Hari Hari Gaura.